Blog Talk Radio.
Center of the world. Latitude zero, longitude zero. Planned by the Creator. Sizanthropus was the first man found on the earth. That earth was the motherland, Africa. We know that without total understanding of what happened in the past, it would be difficult to relate to the future. We know that within the structure of the music, there should be a message, and the message should be truth. So now, we give you Africa, the center of the world.
Washington, D.C. For many of you, this will be your first visit to this historical landmark.
Our tour through these hallowed halls will be conducted by the First Lady.
Good evening, America. This is your president. Please listen carefully to the announcement I'm about to make. After careful consideration and research, Vice President Duke, Congress, and myself have concluded that black people have not advanced technologically. Their educational testing scores are on a rapid decline. The vast majority of them are on welfare and producing babies at a faster rate than they can support them, and we will not carry them anymore. We are left with no other choice but to put slavery back into effect. All blacks will report to the designated camps in their area to receive further orders. The only blacks excused will be those serving in the United States military and the police. Any blacks who do not cooperate will be terminated immediately. I repeat, slavery is back in effect.
We are at war! That's what I told you! I know you heard what the president said, and if the nigga don't move, then he's dead. It's time for us to take the stand. Woman to woman and man to man. Blood rushes through your veins, you feel the fear. Who'd have thought that it could happen here? In the land of the free, home of the brave. The year's 95, you're a slave. Some go in shock when they first hear the news. become your friend.
Dangerous.
No, Howard. You liberals have let them invade our society. You give them jobs, political jobs.
Paul, you missed the point. It's only the smart ones we move up.
That makes it even worse.
Oh, no, we have to move them up. If we leave a smart one in the ghetto, he might develop into a leader against us. But if we raise him up into white society, we neutralize him. He feels compelled to try to act like us. He loses his identity and his racial anger, if he has any. He becomes alien to his brothers. They realize he sold them out and they grow to hate him. He becomes worthless to them and safe for us. No, thank you. In fact, in his love for the creature comforts, except for his color, he's become one of us.
It's you liberals who have lifted them up, Howard.
Paul, you conservatives make a mistake. You can't afford to strangle hope in people. Without hope, people become dangerous.
No, Howard. You liberals have let them invade our society. You give them jobs, political jobs.
Paul, you missed the point. It's only the smart ones we move up.
That makes it even worse.
Oh, no, we have to move them up. If we leave a smart one in the ghetto, he might develop into a leader against us. But if we raise him up into white society, we neutralize him. He feels compelled to try to act like us. He loses his identity and his racial anger, if he has any. He becomes alien to his brothers. They realize he sold them out and they grow to hate him. He becomes worthless to them and safe for us. No, thank you. In fact, in his love for the creature comforts, except for his color, he's become one of us.
You have just heard a formula on how to enslave a person and keep him enslaved. We will welcome you to Africa on the Move. As your host, Brother Africa, it's an honor to come to your home today where we can speak to the powerful and the powerless. We're going to take the heat as we set the seat, and as we define it, we're going to stand behind it. Like always, He may bring you what you need and not necessarily what you want. We have our political panelists and analysts who will be sharing their independently perspectives on topics and ideals. We welcome you, the listening audience, to join us by calling in at 323-679-0841. You will listen to the voice of Brother Africa. So let's get started with our party, who at this particular time, we bring in our brother Haki, who is an organizer and member for the African Awareness Association. And we're going to welcome him to Africa on the Move on the fifth day of May, 2024. Welcome, Brother Haki.
Brother Africa, thanks for having me. My name is Haki Kamafi Mashoki. Brother Africa, let me say, there's something that's of great interest to me. You know, we talk about the introduction of artificial intelligence. And one of the things that I think is important for people to note is that when we talk about artificial intelligence, we can't adequately appreciate its potential unless we understand the role of perception. One of the things, when we talk about perception, many of us in society are guided by perception, not necessarily by facts or by science, but we're led by perception. In other words, the state has a obligation in terms of maintaining its longevity. What it has to do is to create perceptions in our mind, or at least sharpen those perceptions in our mind, which are favorable to the state. So irrespective of the kind of harms that are being perpetuated against the mass of people, perception tells the people that everything is fine. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about, you know, this question in terms of perception and this relationship between political control, economics, and war in society, because I think it's key that we begin to understand that, you know, if we don't come to grips with this whole question around perception, then we simply allow ourselves to be misled and ultimately paying a hell of a price because we don't fundamentally understand the reality of the situation we find ourselves confronted with. Brother Africa, check this out. The perceptions leading to the inevitability of civil war in the U.S. is high. Donald Trump's rants extolling America first with his bigoted undertones serve as the perfect template to galvanize far-right groups while creating optimal conditions to facilitate civil war. However, to conclude Trump's authoritarian disposition is a catalyst for civil war would be short-sighted. Seeds of civil war have germinated from a capitalist structure that sees elites' long-term interests tied to confrontation among the population, sowing division and conflict along the way. Benefits of employing divisive strategy is deemed vital in an era of economic decline if elites are to secure their objectives of maximizing their desire for wealth and control. Now, wealth and control are themselves indispensable in fomenting conditions that lend to divisions in society. Such divisions inevitably leads to social disintegration in the form of inequality, ethnic strife, and dire poverty. Providing these variables are utilized seamlessly by domestic institutions, particularly media platforms, the net impact would be to create perceptions of the U.S. totally unrelated to socioeconomic reality. Now, in shaping reality, fundamental understanding of the role of political discourse is obscured, making analysis of state's affairs murky. It is this murkiness that disguises the undemocratic nature of policies designed to benefit elites. It is these policies, in addition to structural maladies that serve the interests of the wealthy. This dissemination of political power in the U.S. is often orchestrated in a manner in which political objectives are achieved in a manner unbeknownst to the populace. This surreptitious sleight of hand exists with its anti-democratic character for one reason, to prevent the emergence of democracy. In the book White Rural Rage, the author makes the point the rural population of the U.S. makes up about 20% of the total U.S. population, but control over 42% of congressional seats, courtesy of gerrymandering by elites. This homogenized population, home to many of the 85 million evangelicals, who are believed to be fervent supporters of endorsed strongmen to change the direction of the country, employing an array of violence to achieve its objectives, including mass killing and mass internment of U.S. perceived enemies. Of course, this embrace of civil war is partly a response to a capitalist framework that views economic exploitation imperative in times of economic decline, and that this economic exploitation, according to those on the far right, must be brutally waged against the domestic population, what elites consider a necessary fight for dwindling resources. Now, this strategy raises an interesting historical paradox in that pursuing greed, avarice, and policy of indifference to human suffering to amass wealth at the expense of society will only culminate in society's demise, resulting in more destruction and death. Precisely why many elites find it difficult to not to repeat errors of the past is confusing, but the one thing that cannot be confusing is the role of perception. As confusion manifests itself in the economic affairs, the fact the entire economic system imitates a commercial gambling establishment should all give us pause. Like any gambling enterprise, odds are stacked heavily in favor of the enterprise. Why do so many relish the legalized gambling, even when they are disadvantaged by the rules of the game? Continues to be a source of great fascination. Despite the many downsides of the economy masquerading as commercialized gambling, there are those that would maintain there is no alternative, a perception incapable of discerning possibilities. In fact, J.P. Morgan Chase, was recently fined $448 billion for failing to monitor billions in transactions globally. It was disclosed over 30 global trading venues engaged in business misconduct. From J.P. Morgan Chase perspective, this shady practice are irrelevant since the U.S. government, that is the people, are obligated to bail them out when economic losses occur. In other words, J.P. Morgan Chase is too big to fail. This economic reality is unbeknown to many, but the structural right of capitalism goes deeper, including the book dealings of Bank of America and Citibank totaling $7.4 trillion in shady deals. With the Federal Reserve, controller of the currency actually find these large financial institutions? Probably not. They own the economy, not the federal government. Now, Giovanni Ricci, economist, points out of the cyclical pattern of capitalism, boom and bust cycle, and our tendencies. Implicit in his analysis is the role of manufactured scarcity. He states, quote, where trade and production eventually rise, reflected in stock and bond prices, at some point maximizing profits becomes impossible to achieve, end quote. In other words, a law of diminishing return materializes in which economic activity greatly declines, given the perception economic activity has been undermined or simply in a state of scarcity. Interestingly, given this tendency of capitalism, why would savvy investors persist in participating in an economic activity that ultimately culminates in broad economic dislocation, imperiling an entire country? It can be argued in a zero-sum game of capitalism, so-called winners and losers, the suspension of common sense is often displayed with mesmerizing effect. In fact, the entire economic system is predicated on wishful thinking. Keep in mind, investments in the stock market is tantamount to speculation at its heart. Such guesswork is based on the perception the value of stock is predicated on the value of the stock sold. Here's the problem. The level of manipulation in the value of stock is often the actions of bad actors who take advantage of novices. By conspiring with others to purchase particular stocks, the increase in stock value will rise, prompting the bad actors to sell their stocks, achieving a big windfall. Recently, it was alleged Trump attempted a similar strategy with his Truth Social brand, only to be reprimanded by the Security Exchange Commission, who blocked Trump's attempt to sell his own stock after placing millions of dollars on his stock. Trump's attempt to elude the two-month rules established by SEC, often used by institutional investors successfully to cash in early, was foiled this time, but as a strategy continues to be used by large investors. Odds are Trump will revisit his efforts to defraud Wall Street, and we should not be surprised at all. Antics aside, the bigger question is the stock manipulation employed by large financial firms. When such firms sell large volumes of stock under the presumption demand for stocks is endless, many of the firms lack the necessary liquidity to pay off investors when they sell their stocks. In the advent of such an eventuality, these firms expect the federal government to bail them out by providing funds to pay off investors. Clearly, when this happens, the impact on the U.S. economy is significant when government bails out corporations or banks that engage in risky casino-style behavior. The more sad aspect of legalized gambling going to the Federal Reserve is the liquidity crisis currently existing recognizes many businesses currently lack sufficient resources to transact businesses. Yet, business as usual continues. Ironically, the liquidity crisis of the U.S. financial institutions emanate from a myriad of reasons associated with capitalism, but the role of blocking the free flow of capital has been a key factor, certainly one of the key factors. So-called quantitative tightening has exacerbated an already declining economy, impacting investments. Decreased investments translate into decreased in revenues for both the federal government and businesses. With this in mind, given the structural limitations of capitalism, wishful perceptions is not sufficient to bring about needed political change. Obviously, if we don't challenge our perceptions, we will continue to reap the horrors of ideas not predisposed to value humanity, but to reinforce our ignorance. And with that, Brother Africa, I conclude.
Thank you, Brother Haki. Next, we make our transition to Brother Anthony Williams, who is the organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Brother Anthony, we welcome you to Africa on the Move.
Thanks for having me, Brother Africa, and revolutionary greetings to you, the fellow panelists, and the listening audience. My name is Anthony Williams. I'm an organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC. Our objective is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. Also, I want to remind people that our annual commemoration of African Liberation Day is coming in 2 weeks. On Sunday, May 19th, at Fort DuPont Park in Washington, D.C. Please check out our website, www.a-aprp-gc.org. for more information and also more details about African Liberation Day and Pan-Africanism. Our theme this year is Smash the Genocide of International Imperialism, Zionism, and Apartheid. Once again, please check out our website for more information. That's www.a-aprp-gc.org. Thanks.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. And from Brother Anthony, we make a transition to Brother Robert Moses, who's a member of the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity of the Cuban Revolution. We welcome him to Africa on the Move. Welcome, Brother Moses.
Thank you, Brother Africa, and greetings to everyone within the sound of my voice, especially the illustrious panelists. My name is Robert Andrew Moses, and I've been in the struggle for scientific socialism from the moment I was introduced to Marxism, Karl Marx, the father of scientific socialism, during a government class back in my high school years, 1968. I call Marxism the race to cure racism. I bear witness that there's one God, Jesus, who is the author and finisher of my faith, and that for government, Mao Zedong is his messenger. Fathers, help your children. We don't reverse correct verdicts. I'm pro-choice, and I vote. I believe women hold up half the sky. Therefore, I'm for the Equal Rights Amendment. I'm in this struggle for the complete emancipation of the female sex. I believe that we have to unite the many to defeat the few, and that politics determines economics, always has and always will, and therefore the fundamental contradiction we face is a political contradiction. That means government, and that doesn't mean cheerleading from the sidelines. And I leave it at Free Palestine. We have to support the Palestinian people in their just determination for self-determination. We have to support Julian Assange and as a political prisoner. Mumia Abu-Jamal is a political prisoner. There's so many political prisoners we have to struggle to free. And the future is bright. The future is bright. Today is struggle, but the future is bright. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. And from Brother Moses, we're now bringing Sister Eleanor Johnson, who is also an organizer for the D.C. Metro Coalition in solidarity of the Cuban Revolution. We welcome Sister Eleanor to Africa on the Move. Sister Eleanor.
Yes, good evening, Brother Africa panelists, and to our listening audience in the United States and abroad. My name is Eleanor Johnson. I am a member of the Coalition in Solidarity with the Cuban Revolution. I'm also an artist, a former educator, and a human rights activist. I'm very concerned with the environment. Thank you for inviting me to participate this evening. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sister Eleanor. And I believe caller 9052, I believe it's Brother Subukwe. Identify yourself and we welcome you too to Africa on the Move. Caller 9052. 9052, introduce yourself, please. I guess they want to listen. They know who I thought they were. What we're going to do at this point in time, we're going to take a station break. And when we come back, we can discuss our theme today, what's going on. We're going to have a little different format than from normal. Our whole show will be on the theme, what's going on tonight, featuring the students' movement of Palestine and other issues you'd like to bring to the table. So we're going to take a little break at this point in time, and when we come back, we're going to start out with a feature piece on El Jazeera, the English aspect of it, as we can look at how students around the world are taking a stand for Gaza Strip. That's when we return. You're listening to Brother Africa, and this is Africa on the Move.
Hey, what's happening?
Brother,
what's up?
This is a Cuban party, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop right on.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Don't need to escalate. You see, war is not the answer, for only love can conquer hate.
You know we've got to find a way
to bring some love and tears here today. Oh, picket lines and picket signs. Punish me with brutality. Talk to me so you can see.
Right on.
talk to me. You can't see what's going on. Yeah, what's going on? Tell me what's going on. I'll tell you what's going on. Ooh.
Right on. Right on.
We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move on May the 5th, 2024. We're discussing the theme, what's going on. Today we're going to highlight what is happening in Palestine and throughout the world as it relates to the youth, the Palestinian movement. We'd like to have your views and your perspectives as we entertain this particular phenomenon. And right now we want to give you some information, and when we come back, we're going to ask our panelists and you to join in and have a discussion based upon what you have heard as it relates to how students around the world are taking a stand for God's script. The screen, this particular clipping, comes from Al Jazeera, the English version. Check back to listen, and then we'll ask you, find with Brother Anthony to start us off on this question of students and this issue of why they are this spot. So here's the clipping as it relates to how students around the world, they are taking a stand for Gaza.
War in Vietnam and opposing apartheid South Africa, students have long played a crucial role in liberation movements. Today, a growing tide is speaking up for Palestine. So why is solidarity with Gaza igniting campuses across the world? I'm Miriam Francois, and this is The Stream.
An alternative future is possible. أنا أحفي على ديني على أرض تلاقيني أنا نهلي أنا فيهم.
This is the home of America, huh? Oh, wow, man.
Via Italy and Yemen, what started as an encampment at Columbia University in New York 2 weeks ago has turned into a global student movement demanding universities divest from Israel. Is this the peace movement of our generation? And can students succeed where so much public pressure has failed? Joining me from the US, UK, and Australia to discuss this today are three student organizers. Mahmoud El-Sabeta, Palestinian first-year student at Harvard University with the Harvard Out of Occupied Palestine Coalition. Fraser Amos, a PhD student at the University of Warwick with the Warwick Stands with Palestine Coalition. And Yasmin Al-Rawi, third-year student at the University of Sydney with the Students for Palestine Group. Welcome to you all. Thank you so much for being here. Mahmoud, you're joining us from Harvard. Can you tell us exactly what's happening on campus right now?
Yes. So basically on campus right now, we are having an encampment where slaves are occupying the old yard and demanding that they will only leave until we have full disclosure of Harvard's endowment, as well as divestment from the state of Israel and the Israeli regime. Moods are very high right now, and community members are very strong and vigilant and remain steadfast despite so much administrative repression.
Jasmine, same question over to you there. What's the situation in Sydney?
Yeah, well, we've started our encampments here, seeing what's been happening in the U.S., wanting to stand in support of the students there who have set up their encampment and demand similar things from our university in order for them to cut ties with weapons companies that are complicit in genocide in Gaza. So Sydney University, for example, has ties to this weapons company, Thales, which has done collaboration projects that have produced the drones that are used on Palestinians. So we want to see our university end those ties with weapons companies and Israeli institutions in order to stop being complicit in the genocide happening right now.
And Fraser, you're part of the first encampment by a British university. Is the British student movement less politically engaged, or what kinds of unique challenges maybe do you face as compared maybe to your US counterparts when speaking out on Palestine?
Well, I think while we haven't seen the same degree of violence in repressing the protests in Britain that we have at Columbia and Austin and across the US, that British political repression and policing is more sophisticated in some ways. It's more covert. We have something called the Prevent Strategy, for instance, which operates at UK universities and effectively criminalizes and problematizes political speech that anti-imperialist targets Muslim students. And we've also had a wave of government repression recently, new legislation that restricts the right to protest, which gives security services power to operate outside of the law. But nonetheless, we're seeing students in the UK are starting to defy that. And I think in the coming days, we're going to see an increasing wave of encampments across the country.
Mahmoud, in America, we've seen snipers on campus, rooftops, and very heavy-handed policing. But you've also faced other forms of challenges, haven't you, in terms of doxing and threats of expulsion and, of course, accusations of anti-Semitism?
So today's the day. I've got my RTA mock system and Coyote appliances.
Very along the campus. Just over the last semester, we've had doxing trucks come around campus into students' parents' houses, which was incredibly frightening. But we've also had several degrees of repression, such as pro-Palestine proctors being evicted from their houses. Or also just having, currently right now at the encampment, students we're occupying are being passed ID slips threatening that their degree will be withheld if they continue to occupy the yard right now. However, as I said earlier, students are still remaining vigilant despite administration taking disciplinary action and still say they will dedicate their time to occupy the space until our demands are met.
Well, let's hear from Cameron, the lead organizer for Jewish Voices for Peace at Columbia.
I'm in a tent right now in the encampment. I feel extremely, extremely safe on this encampment. So do my Jewish brothers and sisters who are also on this encampment. We have not heard or seen any anti-Semitic rhetoric used on the encampment or used by people affiliated with it. If there is rhetoric that is anti-Semitic being said by outsiders who are not on campus, we condemn that, but we have no control over what random individuals in New York City say or do. All we do know is that on this encampment and on this campus, Jewish students are standing with pro-Palestinian organizers and are involved in the fight. So, yeah. I do believe that anti-Semitism is being weaponized by the university and by the government because the university wants to do anything in their power to take attention away from the ongoing genocide in Gaza. And they will even exploit Jewish trauma to get that to get that message across.
Jasmine, is Jewish safety a concern for you and your colleagues on campus, and how do you ensure it, given so much conflicting information concerning what is said to constitute Jewish fears, including things like, you know, holding a Palestinian flag?
Yeah, well, our protests have been extremely inclusive of people of every faith and every ethnicity and whatnot. We've had Jewish students camp alongside us here at Zanini. We've had our Jewish speakers at every rally that we've put on. And that I think that really indicates just the inclusivity of the Palestine movement being a movement that is for justice, it's against genocide, it's anti-racist, and all of that. And I think, you know, the accusations are just used to deflect from the, you know, real things that we're fighting for, the real issues, you know, happening in Palestine right now.
Mahmoud, as a Palestinian, can I ask how you feel about so much media attention being placed on privileged student safety during an ongoing genocide, including that, of course, of Palestinian students, not least since, of course, there were three Palestinian students shot near an American campus back in November 2023, and not long after a six-year-old Palestinian boy and his mother were stabbed at their home in October last year. Is there any discussion of Palestinian safety happening on campuses?
Well, yeah, there for sure is a definite issue of anti-Palestinian racism. I mean, Harvard itself has its own issue with the Department of Education inside this country opening an investigation into this school because they received a very massive complaint over the last semester. However, despite there being so much prejudice and racism that chases Palestinians every day in this country, a lot of times we use the grief we have to motivate us to take action. I mean, if you just look at Brown University, after three of the men who were shot just for wearing kufiya and speaking Arabic, Hisham was one of them, and he is a student at Brown University. And right afterwards, they created a Brown Divest Coalition to demand Brown University to divest from the Israeli state and also ensure that none of their money is going towards investments in genocide, occupation, or apartheid. You see the same thing over here with repression really energizing people on campus. However, there always is a talk to ensure that Gaza and the genocide going on over there right now is at the more forefront of everything we do. We try doing that with having our event programming circulate and surround so much about what the travesties going on in Gaza right now, as well as making sure that everyone on the ground is aware of what's going on and committed to staying steadfast and demanding Palestinian liberation.
Now, weaponizing privilege for the cause has been a big talking point on campuses. Listen to this.
The kids involved aren't just working class, hardworking kids. Those are kids with privilege. Those are the kids of Congress members and business execs getting arrested. That's a big deal. Columbia University is where the next generation of leaders is supposed to be born. The next generation of oppressors. And now we have all of these young, rich kids using their privilege to fight against the system. Yeah, of course the system's freaking out. And that's not to say that there aren't students that are on that lawn right now risking everything, because there are. But a lot of those kids are weaponizing their privilege against the system that gave them that privilege.
Fraser, I want to ask you, do you think that part of the tough response we're seeing from authorities around the world to these protests is precisely because these are the sons and daughters often of important people who are expected to uphold the status quo?
I think it speaks to the strength of the global solidarity movement that you have students like that that are now being mobilized to take action. University of Warwick is a fairly prestigious institution in the UK, and it's tied as the most militarized university in the UK. And that position means that students taking action here are very conscious of the power, the disproportionate power that we have and that we wield in the encampment.
And Jasmine, I want to ask you, what does wielding privilege look like at this current juncture?
Well, I think like the example here at Sydney Uni is that our university has this like motto that is leadership for good. And I think what they want is to turn all the students into the future, you know, prime ministers, the future, you know, bosses and CEOs in the world. You know, people like the current Prime Minister of Australia graduated from Sydney Uni, Anthony Albanese. But I think what this student movement is about is kind of condemning that kind of idea of leadership and actually supporting and involving students in a movement that is about fighting against oppression, that is leading a struggle for a free Palestine, rather than all the other pathways that our university wants to take us to.
Well, most people will have heard about the protests at Columbia, but have you heard of Cal State Polytechnic in Humboldt? Because you should.
Cal State Polytechnic in Humboldt. They had a sit-in in one of the university's buildings, and like they do, the cops showed up. And these protesters barricaded them out of the building, physically forced them out, and set up barricades made of chairs, tables, the supplies around them. And I am so proud. These students used the skills that we were forced to obtain because we were constantly in fear of being suddenly under attack. And for a lot of those students, they were. We're in America. Someone in that building was working from experience. Somewhere in that building was at least one survivor. And it worked. They successfully fought off the bad guys with guns.
Mahmoud, American students have basically been trained for revolt.
I don't know necessarily if train would be the right word, but there is a saying that a lot of protesters use, which is the more they try to silence us, the louder we will be. And that just goes to show how the high degrees of oppression that face college students every single day, even though people can be restricted from protesting with new protest guidelines such as Harvard, or people are not even allowed to set up chairs, they will get arrested for that, such as University of Florida last night, where 9 people were arrested. You can see that so many people utilize this repression and choose it to energize them, mobilize them, but also learn in future circumstances on how to create their new forms of protest.
Fraser, in the U.S., we've seen some professors and administration staff from the university standing in solidarity with students and even getting arrested. Is that a similar situation in the U.K.?
Yeah, our coalition is made up of students and staff, and we've been campaigning together with them for months to get the university to demilitarize. And as soon as the encampment was set up on Friday evening, we had loads of staff bringing down supplies, putting up tents, helping in every way they can. And the solidarity between students and staff at Warwick right now is very, very tight. And we're also seeing members of the community come in. It's become a real heart of community solidarity. Families are bringing their kids, drawing pictures in solidarity with Gaza. So we're really seeing staff step up and stand with students.
Jasmine, the Indigenous people of Canada recently gave their approval to students to protest on the land of McGill University. How does your own history and that of the Indigenous people of Australia connect you to this movement?
There is a lot of solidarity amongst Indigenous people here in Australia with the struggle for a free Palestine. I think it is, you know, a struggle against racism, a struggle against, you know, the history of colonization here in Australia. And I think, we want to constantly draw connections with the border system of, you know, Australian racism here that continues to see Indigenous, incarceration rates be some of the highest in the world. And continue to see, Indigenous people more likely to go to prison than go to university. I think there's a problem of systemic racism and the lack of any sort of reparation being given to Indigenous people here. And we always stand in solidarity with that struggle. And in fact, here at Sydney University, where I am right now, is where the Freedom Rides started. That was in solidarity with what happened in the US, where some Sydney Uni students took a bus across regional towns to draw attention to the issue of Indigenous oppression and land rights. So it's quite a monumental site of protest. And I think that's the tradition we're standing in, is all these historic fights against injustice, against racism, and all of that.
Now, there has been some criticism online of how the protest movement is being framed. Take a look at this. Yeah, I kind of don't like that student protests are being labeled anti-war. We are part of a liberation movement. The hashtag isn't NYU for no war, it's NYU for Palestine. Until our universities divest and Palestine is free, the students will keep mobilizing. Mahmoud, we've seen some people online describe this as a global student intifada. How do you define this movement?
Meet Janet. Janet loves to work out.
I definitely do like that name a lot. I do think it describes what's going on college campuses, which is communities coming together, mobilizing and fighting to be on the right side of history, which is to have full disclosure and divestment from the Israeli state to make sure Palestine is free within our lifetime. I mean, just whenever I walk around the encampment on campus, there is such a strong community that is staying vigilant despite administration coming through the camp every single day and routinely checking IDs, routinely threatening graduation, routinely threatening to even suspend students. Or some students who are immigrants and who do not have permanent residence inside the United States, they have visas, they've been threatened with disciplinary action, and they're okay despite the fact that they can literally be deported by the university soon. So I think colleges all across the country right now, they are mobilizing for Palestinian liberation first and foremost at the forefront. And the amount of vigilance I see personally as a Palestinian truly does keep the movement alive. And keeps me going every single day to mobilize, but also to organize and just stay steadfast.
I want to ask you all one by one now about the objectives of this global movement. Fraser, what are the objectives of the movement as you understand it, and where do Palestinians sit in defining those objectives?
Well, our encampment and our campaign is first and foremost inspired by the struggle of the Palestinian people and the people of Gaza. We're demanding that our university divest and break all ties with arms companies, that it condemns the genocide, the occupation, the dispossession of the Palestinian people, that it pledges to help rebuild Gaza's education sector, and that it protects free speech in solidarity with Palestine. And I think at the same time as seeing this encampment as part of the global Palestine solidarity movement, we also see how the struggle of the Palestinian people is connected to the struggle of all oppressed people against colonialism, and how the war machine that's tested in Gaza is deployed around the world by the United States and its allies to suppress liberation struggles.
Jasmine, same question to you. Is this an anti-war movement, a liberation struggle? How do you define it, and where do Palestinians fit within that?
I think there isn't necessarily something mutually exclusive about fighting for Palestinian liberation, but also fighting against war. Like a lot of the weapons companies that we're demanding our university cut ties with are also complicit in, trading the weapons used by the Australian military that have deployed them, when they joined the invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. So I think we want to fight against these arms companies in order to not only see an end to the genocide happening in Gaza, but to any future genocide and any future war that sees, our government and governments across the world put their own interests, their imperialist interests are beyond the interests of ordinary people.
And Mahmoud, as a Palestinian yourself, how do you feel about the fact this issue is igniting U.S. campuses and global campuses?
Yeah, like I said earlier, it truly does warm my heart. I mean, just talking to my mother the other day, and she was a organizer for Palestinian Liberation in her time as well. She told me she would never expected such a global student movement that fights for Palestinian liberation to the extent where it is right now. But I mean, truly, I feel like just with this movement in general, it does show how students are now changing their beliefs and how there's been so much Zionist propaganda in the past. It's being disrupted. I mean, students who are in universities right now will eventually obtain jobs, will eventually obtain places of power within their lives. But I truly hope that this ends up with change to the Israeli regime and for the full decolonization and occupation of Palestine. And it will be free in our lifetime because of the student movement and because people have shown their solidarity to Palestinians and stood on the right side of history with Palestinians demanding liberation for their land.
Well, one thing we have heard from student protesters we've spoken to is the need to center Palestinians. So let's end this discussion by hearing from Farah Amar, a student from Gaza who was doing a degree in media before the Israeli assault dramatically changed her life. Over to you, Farah.
Hello, I'm Farah. I'm from Gaza. I registered at Gaza University and joined the Vice President Media, which had been a dream and a dream plan, but Israel war killed my dream, and I lost my feet and all. My life was beautiful before the war. I was in a very big class, and I didn't go early to university again. And I go home on food, but now I have no peace. My message to the world is to stop the war, and I thank the university students around the world for their support to stop the war in Gaza specifically.
I want to thank you, our guests, Mahmoud, Fraser, and Yasmin. And, of course, thank you all for watching. Are you part of the global student movement? We want to hear from you. Send us your comments.
Welcome you back to Africa on the Moon. You were just looking at a feature story done by Al Jazeera, the English version, on how students around the world are taking a stand for Gaza Strip. We're going to invite you and our political panelists to join us at this point in time as we critique what we have heard from this particular footage on this issue that's going on right now in terms of the Palestinian youth, the students. They are being the spot to fight for their people and liberation and to recapture their home Palestine. At this point in time, we've been bringing our political panelists and analysts, Brother Anthony. I know one of the things your party is fun, is very fond of saying is that students are the spark. What's going on right now around the world, around this Palestinian issue? It seems very clearly that they are sparking a reaction where they are, one, exposing the contradictions that have existed between the powerfulness of the Zionist movement and the lack of powerfulness of the Zionist movement when it comes to people are determined and are organized to fight against it. So based upon what you heard, Brother Anthony, this question about students, Spock, and what's going on, just give us a general analysis on what you heard from this footage and what's going on at this point in time with students, the movement, encampment, and this whole phenomenon or this resistance that the Palestinians and other people of fairness and justice, they are fighting back. Your response in general, Brother Anthony.
Yes. The Palestinian struggle for liberation shows once again that students are the spark of the revolution. As the comrade mentioned during the piece, Vietnam Korea, China, even the Soviet Union itself, students has served as sparks of revolutions throughout the world. And I think the Palestinian struggle is an excellent example of this. And it is notable that the indigenous people around the world are standing in solidarity with the Palestinians in their struggle against Zionism and settler colonialism. And I think this is significant because the indigenous people in Australia and in the Americas are showing solidarity with the Palestinians in their struggle against Zionism and settler colonialism. And that's what we wanted. This is very much suppressed, unfortunately, in African communities inside the U.S. And that is one of the things we want to bring awareness of. And that's why we chose this particular theme this year, to show the similarities between the African liberation struggle and the Palestinian liberation struggle. They're similar. As a matter of fact, they're battling against some of the same forces: imperialism, capitalism, Zionism, and exploitations and all manifestations of capitalism. And so I think it's important, and that's why we chose this particular theme, to show the similarities and also to show solidarity with the Palestinians in their struggle for liberation.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Brother Haki, before we go into any specific issues that were raised in this particular documentary or this feature that was done on Al Jazeera, we're going to ask you for your general response to what you heard and what is going on right now around the Palestinian issue, or the Palestinian people being forcefully genocided and moved out of their homeland. Brother Haki.
Yeah, well, yeah, Brother Africa, you know, in terms of student provide a spark, I mean, certainly, I mean, there's no question about that. I think, but one of the fundamental deficits in terms of that movement, if we can call it that, I think it's a question around in terms of those issues that are vital in terms of bringing to attention just the insidious nature, you know, of capitalism as it exists, you know, throughout the world. So one of the things that when you talk about some liberation of Palestine, one thing, let's be very, very clear, as the Zionists employ a strategy in terms of depopulating, you know, the Palestinian population in Israel in terms of the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, when we talk about the propensity they do and the support from the United States government, let's be very, very clear, when all the dust is settled, this question in terms of liberation becomes questionable, because I think there is no real analysis in terms of, you know, in terms of those factors inside of Palestine itself, who contribute to these this onslaught, you know, by embracing certain Western policies that it perceives as somehow in its interest in a very unusual kind of way. So I think to the extent that if we're really talking about in terms of the empowerment of Palestine, then we have to incorporate this question around particular interests as they exist in Palestine and how those interests are counterproductive to the aspirations of the Palestinian people. I don't think that's happening. I think also in context of America, I think one of the things is that we have the solution, in fact, this expression that's taking place across these college campuses, that is in fact somehow empowering. On some level, it's empowering, but what it doesn't do is doesn't provide an adequate critique in terms of the system itself that exists inside the United States that make it possible. You have a situation in the United States where systematically the political apparatus actually provides weapons and funds to carry out the genocide against Palestinian people, then it has to be a much more sharper critique in terms of the kind of viciousness in terms of the American system. So what I'm not hearing in these discussions is any relationship between U.S. foreign policies and the kind of money it provides, to the Zionists, and the kind of knee-jerk response to the overwhelming killing, of innocent Palestinian people. So I think there has to be some type of discussion around this in terms this relationship between capitalism as it exists in the United States and Zionism as it exists in the regime of Israel. So without that connection, I think this is all in good, and it brings attention to the fact that this plight is that the Palestinian plight is worthy of attention. But if we're going to seriously address this thing, I think we need much more of a critique. I think one thing I'm sort of a bit disheartened about is that a lot of this critique, to the extent that people recognize its existence, I think it's muted by the fact that, people are afraid to even talk about America's role in terms of facilitating this kind of genocide against the Palestinian people. So we can indict the Zionists, which is all in good, but if we don't we don't circle the square, if we don't incorporate U.S. Complicity or duplicity with the Zionist duplicity in terms of the killing and maiming of the Palestinian people, then we're doing half a job in terms of bringing the whole picture to existence. So I think without a whole picture in terms of our understanding of the world, then I think that the bottom line is when it's all said and done, when the dust has settled, I think the bottom line is that all that we are seeking to achieve right now in terms of liberating Palestine won't be achieved. That is my concern. So I'm just wondering, and I do understand that you have an environment in America in which people are actually afraid to even critique America. They won't do it because they understand that on a very informal level, if they did critique America in terms of its role, in terms of being duplicitous in terms of the genocide of the Palestinian people, they understand that there's a much steeper price to pay for that kind of stand. And so people are, for that reason, not taking a stand. So I think if we're going to be sincere in terms of bringing about the kind of resolve that we need in terms of bringing a truly liberated Palestine, I'm talking about a two-state solution. Because at this point, there's no sense in talking about a Palestinian state, because the Palestinians don't have that kind of organization at this point. So essentially what we talk about is a two-state solution, which is the Zionists are adamantly opposed to and actively killing people to ensure that the two-state solution never comes to fruition. So given this reality, if we don't have a much more definitive understanding or definitive definition in terms of the relationship between the capitalists in America and the Zionists and Israeli regime, then I think we do a disservice to this Palestinian liberation. So such liberation becomes that much more difficult to achieve, in the final analysis. So that's my big concern, and I conclude with that.
Brother Haki, can I ask you something?
Sure.
I heard your position, but I also know, based upon my research and listening to different movements around the world dealing with this issue, coming from the Palestinians, most Palestinians, they are not and have not accepted this concept of a two-state solution. To accept a two-state solution means to accept no solution at all. That is to say, in principle, how are you going to compromise your home, any part of your home, to get half of your home up where this whole home from the beginning was your home? Most Palestinians, and this is part of the movement, that they are fighting against the class struggle within among themselves. Most of them in their leadership, they have stated that they sold out a long time ago. This is one of the things that creating this particular phenomenon. In terms of your critique of things that I'm not talking about in terms of putting in relationship of the U.S. role, Zionists, what have you, my position is I think it's taking place, but the problem is it's not going to be in mass media because most of the mass media is covered by Zionism. So I just put those few points out there, and you can respond if you like to.
Yes. Well, you're absolutely correct. But the problem is that the Palestinian leadership, by and large, endorses this whole notion around a two-state solution. And certainly I understand why they would endorse a two-state solution at this point in history. the Palestinians don't have that kind of organization at this point in terms of actually, you know, waging a full-scale struggle in terms of freeing that entire land, that entire space. So I do understand, you know, from their perspective, why this, from a strategic point of view or tactical point of view, it's good. A two-state solution is the best you can do at this point in history. I think it sort of preserves the possibility in terms of, you know, in the long term, to wage a full struggle in terms of the total liberation of the entire country. But I think it's a process involved, and I think that is understandable. But as far as the class issue, you're absolutely correct, Brother African. That's the point that I'm raising. So one of the things that while we're really talking about how pleased we are in terms of, you know, students in terms of, you know throughout the world, particularly in Palestine, raising the question in terms of Zionism, and we like to see that. We understand that implicitly in terms of Palestinian leadership, there are benefits to be had in terms of support from Western states by endorsing Western policy. And so in that regard, they're not particularly interested in terms of waging real struggle against the Zionist forces. In that regard, we got to understand that those people are always there in positions of power. And because they're in positions of power, unless they're removed, they're not going to do what they perceive is in their best interest, not in the interest of the Palestinian people, but it's in their best interest. So that's the fundamental problem we have. I think in terms when you talk about the role of the Zionist media, you're absolutely correct, Brother Africa, but here's the thing. One of the things they're looking for in terms of commercialism, they're looking for something that's out of the norm, things that are out of the norm. For those speakers who critique the United States consistently, let me tell you something. They're going to talk about that. Why? They're going to talk about it because they want to, number one, they want to use those individuals as an example to the others who may speak out. But more importantly, it's newsworthy. Because if people actually critique the United States in terms of its hardcore policy, it has implications not just for Palestine, but it has implications for oppression of African people in society, oppression of Latino people in society, oppression of other groups in society, gays and so forth in society. So the implications in terms of, you know, talking about in terms of the role that the U.S. plays in terms of facilitating injustice, When you create a situation in which you start with the critique in terms of the kind of duplicity the U.S. engages in terms of what's happening in Palestine, but when you broaden that context when you start talking about, you know, U.S. policy generally in terms of the facilitation of injustice across the board, not just in Palestine, but throughout inside this country, throughout the world. And so, therefore, that becomes newsworthy. So even the Zionists, of course, they're going to do all they can to limit the kind of information that's out there for the public. Okay, but you know, so what I'm doing, you know, I'm looking and I'm listening and I'm trying to get a sense in terms of whether or not people make that connection. I mean, I'm sure that the limited student leaders understand the connection, but I think they're hesitant to do so because of maybe political. I mean, not such political reasons, but reasons that very, very, I think very, very simplistic in that well, but for very tactical reasons. Certainly, I mean, one of the things that kids, these youth want to do, you want to graduate from university. Of course, speaking out too loudly may jeopardize your opportunity in terms of graduation, and so therefore you'd be hesitant to speak out. I do understand that. You know what I'm saying? So all I'm saying, Brother Africa, you're absolutely correct. But I don't get a sense, you know, that in terms of that relationship between the fundamental injustice that exists in society and the fundamental justice extended to the Palestinians is being discussed. And that is my concern. And I do understand the political parameters in terms of people's fear of speaking out. But nonetheless, if we're talking about liberation of Palestine, indeed, if we're talking about liberation of the world, then we have to talk first and foremost about the iniquity imposed in terms of policy imposed by the United States, not just on the Palestinians, but throughout the world, even on its own population. So I hear your point, but I would disagree in terms of the designer's ability to totally censor everything that's happening. I think for commercial gain, I think if for those individuals who actually start speaking out in terms of the ratio between the ruthlessness of United States capitalism and the privilege in the Zionist regime in Israel, I think it's going to make the news because not only is it newsworthy, it's because it's provocative and because, you know, those in positions of power want those people who are taking such a stand to be known so they can set an example of them so other people will be afraid to take similar kinds of stands. And I'll close with that.
All right, let's make our transition to Brother Moses. Brother Moses, what's your thought on this phenomenon that's going on at this point in time around the Palestinian question?
First of all, without a vision, the people perish. Without revolutionary theory, there can be no revolutionary movement. So it's important that we be grounded fundamentally in dialectical and historical materialism, in Marxism-Leninism, that is. And so, you know, I think, you know, Marxism and the National Colonial Question by Joseph Stalin, put out by Proletarian Publishers in 1975, is a good book to have if you want to understand Marxism and the National Colonial Question from the Bolshevik standpoint, and it's still applicable today. And so, you know, first of all, Palestine is a nation, and the national question is a question of land. And the land that Palestinians are on is their land. And conclusion is off base. There's only one state solution. Revolution is the solution. Just like in South Africa, it was a one-state solution. You know, Jewish minority rule is no different from white minority rule that was going on in South Africa. You know, there's nothing illusionary about it. It's straight-up scientific socialism. And so, you know, the separate but equal state solution is not going to work. And we have to be scientific. We can't base our ideas on some kind of religion or some kind of popularity contest, or I don't know what it is, but we have to be scientific. And there is a body of works that have been proven correct. And so there is an ideology called Marxism, Leninism, Mao Zedong thought. And there is a body of works that back it up. And so, you know, I'm saying we have to apply dialectical historical materialism to this situation. The Palestinian people have a right to their homeland, and thank God the students' movement has sparked, a single spark has started a prairie fire, and I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. But I would like to just remind you, Brother Moses, that all people have a history. All people have the right to think for themselves. All people should use their experiences as the basis of developing whatever ideology they develop that would suit their particular needs and interests. We understand Marxism-Leninism is a valid ideology, but not necessarily for the whole world, but for a particular set of history, a particular set of countries, you know, the culture that the idea came out of. So we're not going to belittle the Palestinians in terms of saying they are incapable of creating their own ideology that will fit their own thoughts and modes and ways of how to free themselves as a people. Let's go now to Sister Eleanor. Sister Eleanor, your general take on what's going on around the Palestinian issue. Sister Eleanor.
Good evening and thank you. Well, students at Columbia and Brown University have definitely hit a spark. Now, the thing that was most interesting on the campus this week was the fact that the pro-Zionist people came out. I don't know whether or not they were Columbia or Brown students. No one seemed to know. The police and the media could not identify these people. But they really placed the students in danger when they began to throw fireworks and other things at them because of the fact that they were living in tents and they're flammable. I think the fact that the students around the world are standing in solidarity with the Palestinian people is keeping them alive. It is the light where otherwise there would be darkness. Now, in January, like on January 13th, around the world, you saw a mass movement of demonstrations on that day that not only included students, but it included people from every walk of life. That was a global risk to the South African action at the Hague when the South Africans alleged that the Israeli actions were human rights violations. The thing that's most important today that stays in my mind is that over 35,000 people, Palestinians, have been killed. The fact that 7,000 are missing in the rubble, that over 14,000 children have been killed, and these are children below the age of 12. And the fact that there is a famine, these people are not able to eat. They don't have access to water, to food, to a toilet, to a shower. These are outrageous. And the fact that the United States is standing firmly with Israel, the fact that these Zionists don't recognize two-state solution. Palestinians are not allowed civil liberties in the settler state of Israel. They're not allowed to vote. They're not allowed to maintain their ancestral homes. Their homes can be annexed at a moment. And we have seen every school, when you talk about students, and this is what makes the student solidarity movement so important, every school in Palestine, every university has been demolished, and it's been demolished for a reason. They want these young people to be ignorant. Every medical facility, except for two that I last heard, had been destroyed. And one of those two remaining was in dismal condition. And one of the doctors that had been interviewed just 2 weeks ago had a colleague of his that was not in Gaza but had left. And the colleague that had been interviewed on Al Jazeera and the BBC was now dead. And the fact that more journalists have been killed during this from October 7th to now, then we can imagine over 125 or more journalists. Now, we saw a three-year-old girl shot by a sniper in the head, not once, but twice. We've seen numerous videos of children in the hospital, 6 and 7 year olds fighting for their lives. We've seen these children as amputees, and the amputation seemed to be almost planned. It's almost as if it was when the Tutus and there was the fight in Sierra Leone 2 decades ago.
Ready to stop the sister Eleanor. Gonna have to wrap it up.
This is an example of imperialism, and it's also a demonstration of a lack of free press, in that we see a one-sided journalism. We do not get a full picture of what is happening. in Palestine. We see the deaths. We see the dead Palestinians. We see all of these things. But the media fails to address the issue of the apartheid state, of the famine and what that means to people, the lack of access to medicine and everyday supplies, whether it's your dialysis or your diabetic medicine. People have no access. Those are the invisible dead. We don't even know how many thousands of people have died like this. And the students are standing up. They're giving up. Many of them have been expelled or threatened with expulsion. And this takes great courage. And they're not only standing up for the Palestinians. They're standing up for liberty and justice everywhere. Thank you, Brother Africa.
Thank you. Brother Anthony? There are many ways they are trying to undermine this movement. One of the ways that came out in this particular documentary, Brother Anthony, is this concept of weaponizing being anti-Semitic. Will you speak to that particular tactic, Brother Anthony? What is your take on that? Are you with me, Brother Anthony? Okay, I think we have some problems with Brother Anthony. What we're going to do at this point in time, move on to Brother Haki. Brother Haki, this issue of how they're using and weaponizing this concept of being anti-Semitic as it relates to those who come in opposition to the Israel state of oppression. Your response, Brother Haki.
You're absolutely correct, Brother Africa. This charge of anti-Semitism, increasingly, it's becoming less effective in terms as a tool of propaganda. Increasingly, more and more groups are coming out in terms of a real analysis in terms of the history of Judaism and precisely what that means. So we have a situation currently where you got these people out of Poland and Germany who are saying that, in fact, they're Jews. But then you go back and look at the history in terms of who's a Jew. It has nothing to do with these Europeans out of Germany or Poland. Interesting enough, though, one of the things when you talk about, we can't divorce this notion, when we talk about Judaism, we can't dismiss the role of Ethiopia in terms of this formation of what we call Jews. It's very interesting. They had a couple of books called the Gerima, and these gospels. They had two gospels, right? The Gerima gospels, Gerima Gospel 1 and Gerima Gospel 2. Now, Gerima Gospel 1 was created between 660 BC and 530 BCE. And Gerima 2 was created between 570 BC and 390 BCE. And it's very interesting because one of the things that we talk about when we talk about Judaism, some things are certain important in terms of adequately defining who is a Jew. One of the things that, there were three books from the Gerima Gospel that was excluded from so-called traditional Western books, in particular the Torah and the so-called King James Version of the Bible. And that is the Book of Enoch, the Book of Jubilees, the Book of Barak. Now, what is interesting that when we talk about in terms of the Book of what is interesting about that is that the book specifically talks about in terms of the relationship in terms of, you know, so-called Jewish thought. And so this notion in terms of, so when you fundamentally dismiss Ethiopia's role in terms of the formation of Judaism, you do a disservice. And one of the reasons why the Book of Baruch was removed, because it makes that relationship between Judaism and Ethiopian groups very, very concrete. And also the Book of Jubilees was very, very interesting because that book specifically lays out, when we talk about Jewish themes, it particularly lays out the question in terms of the Jewish Sabbath, dietary laws, and circumcision. So this notion that, in fact, that these people out of Poland and Germany were, in fact, Jewish, I think is increasingly being indicted. And people begin to understand that this notion in terms of anti-Semitism is not what these people are telling us. So the bottom line is, when you talk about, there was a book that was written by the brother name, Benjo Kahn, of course, wrote a lot of books on the question of Judaism. But this was a white guy, and I can't remember his name. But anyway, You remember the book Black Athena? I can't remember his name. It's off the top of my head. I can't remember his name. Anyway, he talked about in terms of the role, the evolution of Jews in terms of, you know, their African identity. And so therefore, you know, so when these people out of Poland in Poland and Germany talk about the evolution of Judaism and say that to be Jew is to look like a white person, it's totally disingenuous. It has nothing to do in terms of Judaism. Now, keep in mind, Judaism is a way of life. So anyone who wants to be a Jew can be a Jew. But when these people disseminate this notion that, in fact, that Jews got to look white in order to be Jews and to dismiss Jews who happen to be in Africa and other places around the world, in the Middle East, when they fundamentally dismiss people in terms of their Jewishness based upon skin color, then clearly, you know, that is consistent with this whole Zionist ethos, which says that, you know, Judaism, you know, exclusively white. Also, when we talk about the kind of racism that is so implicit in terms of Zionism, then we understand why. So it's incumbent upon us as the people who are seeking the truth to understand. So when they use that charge of anti-Semitism, understand it. It is weaponized. It's all about making sure that there's no critique that is related to the regime of Israel. So the critique in Israel is synonymous with being anti-Semitic. And as the brother wrote in his book, Black Athenia, one thing, let's be very, very clear. When you talk about Semitism, you're talking about people of color. White people are not Semitic. So this is the book, Black Athenia. So anybody who wants to know more about that, please read the book, Black Athenia. I can't remember the brother's name. He's a white guy. I can't remember the brother's name, but it's a very, very good book. And, of course, Dr. Ben Jochanan, who's a Jewish himself, was excellent books. And so if you want to know more about this question, please read these books. But clearly, Brother Africa, you're right. It's all about weaponizing, you know, anti-Semitism. So any critique of Israel, the regime of Israel, becomes somehow anti-Jewish. And that's what they want to promote. So to the extent that people are becoming more conscious and people begin to understand the reality in terms of the history of Judaism, they begin to see through these strategies or these tactics employed, you know, by the powers that be, particularly the Zionists, to confuse people around the question of who's Jewish. And I close with that.
Thank you, Brother Hakeem. Brother Moses, they made the point of this movement seem to be following the path of the so-called civil rights Vietnam movement in terms of its impact that it's beginning to have on the world. What's your take on that, Brother Moses? Do you think this could be the beginning of a movement that was generated back in the 60s, like the Vietnam War? Your response, Brother Moses.
Certainly there's a movement there. The Vietnam movement, I remember back, it was maybe 70, what was it? It's a matter of history. When I was near George Washington University and Nixon swept 12,000 people off the street, I think the slogan was either the government will stop the war or we'll stop the government. I still have a button with that on it. And so, the movement is the movement. And just like the Occupy movement was a good movement, certainly this movement is more focused in terms of what it can accomplish, just like the South African movement was focused in what it could accomplish and it did accomplish. And this movement will accomplish its objective. There's no question about that because it's just as fair and as righteous. And so we looked, just like Christianity is applicable to everybody on the planet, Marxism, Leninism, Mao Zedong thought is applicable to everybody on the planet. And I'll leave it right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Brother Anthony, if you're back, please hit one on your line. Please hit one right now, Brother Anthony, if you can hear me. Please hit one. Hit one, Brother Anthony, if you can hear me. Sister Eleanor, speak to the issue of this course of class, looking at the type of students and what's going on in universities. Many people talk about these elite universities such as Columbia, and the students and what they represent. They represent the future of the powerful. They represent future leaders who will be governing in these kind of institutions that are now in power. But now their children are rebelling against what they stand. What you make of this particular perspective in terms of the students who have access to wealth and money students now rebelling against what their parents and these institutions are trying to maintain. Your response to that phenomenon, briefly, Sister Eleanor, your response.
Would you repeat the question, Brother?
What's your response, Sister Eleanor? What is your response, Sister Eleanor, to those students who are part of the elite class and they are out rebelling against what's going on today?
Well, these students are standing up. You know, on Wednesday, the House of Representatives passed a bill they call the anti-Semitism But what these students are really standing up against, Brother Africa, is standing up against fascism, against fascism, a lack of freedom of speech. That's what's really going on with this anti-Semitism. The bill was called, I believe, the Anti-Semitism Awareness Act. And it was an adoption of an International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance. That's the definition of anti-Semitism for the enforcement of federal anti-discrimination laws regarding education programs. Now, that bill passed with a 320-91 votes, 70 Democrats and 21 Republicans voted against the measure, and a couple of other people abstained, including Jewish people. The international groups define anti-Semitism as a certain perception of Jews, which may be expressed as hatred towards Jews, and gives examples of the definition that's applicable. But right now, what this bill actually does is it limits anyone's speech about the Zionist state of Israel. It really doesn't seem to focus on anti-Semitism. It focuses on not speaking about the Zionist state and the Holocaust, the annihilation of some 35,000 people and their every community and village they have, except for the adjoining space where over 600,000 children are in a camp near the Egyptian border. Now, the reality is, Brother Africa, these students, all the young people are the leaders of the future. They are the people who will lead our world and move forward. They are the firefighters, the professors, the doctors of the future, especially the students in these elite schools such as Harvard, Brown, and UCLA and Columbia University. But what's really horrific right now is the response that the students are receiving from the state. And I would say right now, in terms of the Vietnam movement, I think right now, I think it's even larger right now. There may not, you know, the Brother Moses mentioned the 12,000 people back during the Vietnam War. I think there are literally tens of thousands of students across the United States and around the world that are standing in solidarity with the Palestinians, but more important, just protesting against the annihilation, the murder, the the just the cold-blooded murder of the Palestinian people, just the cold-blooded murder and the annihilation of their culture, of their lives, of their communities, to see people fall asleep and the next day they wake up with pieces of their bodies, of their children's bodies, and their parents having disappeared, and to see an aunt or a cousin just trying to put the pieces together for burial. People are standing in solidarity. These students are standing in solidarity. It's just that right now the media has such strong control over what we see and what we hear, until it's trying to make the movement, the student movement, appear to be very small. When you saw the anti-Zionist demonstrators at Columbia attack the students who had been demonstrating and had the tent city for over 2 weeks, no one gave a story of that situation. They made it look like it was a violent, the media reported about a violent situation at Columbia and the violence that the university could no longer stand. Instead of just addressing the fact that these peaceful demonstrators were attacked, these people standing up for the Palestinian people's right to life, no one spoke up and said that they were attacked by the same type of people that you see attacking the Palestinians, such as the settlers. But only they weren't armed with all the weapons that the settlers have in Palestine. Thank you, Brother Africa.
Thank you. We're going to try to be patient, try one more time, see what's happening with our Brother Anthony. Brother Anthony, can you hear me, Brother Anthony? Say yes. Can you hear me, Brother Anthony?
Yes.
Okay, my question to you is, one way to distort a movement, a struggle, is how you frame it in the media. Can you talk about the different ways how this particular movement is being framed in a way that's not in the best interest of the Palestinians? For example, they have reduced the whole movement around the issue around who is the leadership, Hamas, and whether or not they should deal with Hamas, versus overlooking the real issue is the Palestinians had a right to own the government home. They had a right to return home. These are the kind of issues that they are not talking about, but they are talking about issues just as when they're looking at the so-called protest movement, students not following the rules, and therefore they must be punished and follow the rule of law. So it's just a whole way they are reframing them in the media. Speak to this particular phenomenon, Brother Anthony.
Yes. One critical observation. The media in the U.S. is controlled by Zionist forces, and you can distort information either by suppressing it, or putting an emphasis, a misemphasis on certain pieces of information. In other words, the way news is covered in this society is from a bourgeois point of view, and a Zionist and a pro-Zionist point of view, because the Zionists, as I said, control the media. And this has a dangerous effect on how people receive information and what they do with it. This confuses the Palestinian issue. It is about the Palestinian struggle for control of their land. It goes is beyond Hamas. Even though Hamas, may have sparked the current phase of the Palestinian struggle, it is a nearly century-old struggle against Zionist forces that is the real issue. And by distorting the issue, it distorts the people, the people that are fighting for change. And, students spark revolutionary change. That's what they do. And that's the principal role they have. And they're playing that role very well. But the enemies of the Palestinians are distorting things. And it spreads confusion among the people. And with confusion comes inaction or misguided action. And so I think what's happening is that information is being distorted to support the views of the bourgeoisie. And it confuses things. So I think there's a lot of confusion going on, and I think it's the task of revolutionaries to try to clarify so that people have a better understanding of what's going on.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. At this point in time, we will make a transition from Salomon Adoum, Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network. That's a statement, student organization. It's a statement from the student organization in the Gaza Strip. We want to hear the student's point of view, and once we hear their point of view, we'll come back with our political panel analysts, and we'd like to have their final thoughts on the statement and the final thoughts on today's program. So let's check this particular statement out. It's a student statement. It's a statement from student organization in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with the students anti-Fatah in the United States, coming from Salomon Adoum, Palestinian Prison Solidarity Network.
Statement, student organizations in the Gaza Strip in solidarity with the student intifada in the United States. April 25, 2024. In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. We, the students of Gaza, salute the students of Columbia University, Yale University, New York University, Rutgers University, the University of Michigan, and dozens of universities across the United States who are rising up in solidarity with Gaza and to put an end to the Zionist U.S. genocide against our people in Gaza. As we remain under the bombs of occupation, resisting Nazi genocide, grieving for our martyred colleagues and faculty, and witnessing the destruction of our universities, we welcome the examples of solidarity offered by students facing arrest, police violence, suspension, eviction, and expulsion in order to demand that their universities end their complicity in the Zionist U.S. genocide and renounce their support for the occupation and the war profiteers that arm it. We have seen hundreds of students arrested across the United States as they work to transform their universities into popular universities for Gaza. Students, faculty, and staff are disrupting university operations and making clear that while universities in Gaza are being bombed, university business cannot continue as usual in the United States. These actions come as university administrations collaborate with members of Congress to discredit conscientious student activists and faculty, expel students, ban events, shut down student organizations such as Students for Justice in Palestine, and condemn activists working to end the Nazi genocide. At the same time, these same universities invest in the same companies that profit from the continued sale of weapons to the Zionist regime to continue its genocidal offensive. Our students, and our educational system as a whole, in occupied Palestine are subjected to ongoing genocidal aggression, our universities destroyed and bombed, our student organizations banned, and our student leaders subjected to torture, assassination and mass imprisonment. However, in Palestine and around the world, the student movement has always been a driving force of our struggle for liberation. When we see videos and images from American universities today, we are reminded of our history of student struggle as well as the student uprisings of 1968, which challenged imperialism from Vietnam to Palestine and reshaped the face of Europe and the United States. Now, in 2024, the student movement is once again leading the way. From here in Gaza, we see you and salute you. Your actions and activism matter, especially in the heart of the empire, in the United States. As members of Congress agree to provide $26 billion in additional weapons to bomb our people and continue the Zionist U.S. genocide, you are taking meaningful action to shut down the war machine on your campuses. It is clear that a new generation is rising that will no longer accept Zionism, racism, and genocide, and that stands with Palestine and our liberation from the river to the sea. Your global student solidarity is breaking boundaries, and it is time to smash the U.S. imperialist war machine. From Gaza to Columbia, to Ann Arbor and Berkeley, our hands are joined to end Nazi genocide and achieve our collective liberation. Student Framework Secretariat. Islamic Bloc, Islamic Resistance Movement. Student Unity Bloc, Democratic Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Union of Student Struggle Committees, Arab Liberation Front. Union of Palestinian Student Struggle Committees, Palestinian Arab Front. Islamic League, Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine. Fatah Youth, Fatah Movement. Al-Mubadara Student Gathering, the Palestinian National Initiative Movement. Student Action Front, Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine. Palestine Liberation Youth, Palestine Liberation Front. Al-Istiklal Student Bloc, Palestinian Democratic Union FIDA. Student Struggle Bloc, Palestinian Popular Struggle Front. The Land and Man Bloc, Popular Front, General Command. Progressive Student Union Bloc, Palestinian People's Party. Join the Etsamadow Network channel on Telegram.
You guys just heard from Samadou, Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network, a statement of students' organizations in the Gaza to the student movement in the U.S. We come back to our political panelists and analysts, and for those who listen to this program, if you have a comment that you would like to make, feel free to call in at 323-679-0841. Please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. If you want to make a statement, please hit 1, and we will acknowledge your last four numbers. So right now, we're going to Brother Moses for his response to this particular statement and his final thoughts. The mic is yours, Brother Moses.
Thank you, Brother Africa. Certainly, the people of the world are uniting. Countries want their independence. Nations want liberation. The people want revolution. The student movement reflects that movement, and all the contradictions are there. We have to unite. The state, the government is the problem in terms of creating the economic conditions we're faced with, what we have and what we don't have. We don't have public education. We don't have to the cradle to the grave. We don't have health care, public health care for the cradle to the grave. And it's a lot of things we have to struggle for, but we have to keep our eyes and know that revolution is the solution and that we have to continue to organize, organize, organize. Thank you.
Thank you, Brother Moses. Next, we go to Sister Eleanor. In response to the statement and your final thoughts for the night, Sister Eleanor.
The genocide that's going on in Palestine is not going on without eyes watching. And despite the media distorting the reality of the demonstrations throughout the United States and throughout the world, people are standing strong. The thing that concerns me most is the act that the House of Representatives passed last week, and that it makes saying virtually anything about Israel anti-Semitic. And the reality is that not every person that's Jewish is a Zionist, but the reality is that there are many right-wing churches that have distorted the reality of the Palestinian question, and that Israel pays to set up this kind of propaganda in these evangelist churches, and it is having a horrible impact on the minds of people under the idea that they're worshiping Christ. In effect, they're just soaking up propaganda and are misinformed and are filled with hatred. The reality is these students are non-violent. Their lives are at risk. We hear them speaking up. Their universities, their high schools, their daycare centers have been annihilated. The libraries have been annihilated. I've already said this. And this is a genocide. It is a Holocaust. It is, even the South Africans said they could not compare it to anything that they know of. And they had endured apartheid in South Africa, in Zimbabwe, former Rhodesia. But the South African people and nations around the world, unions around the world, are standing in solidarity with the students, and the people will not yield. The issue now is trying to shut the media up and make it anti-Semitic to discuss the realities of the situation in Gaza. The people of the Palestinian people have no military. They have no weaponry. You see the horrible Holocaust that has gone on in the Gaza Strip. You've seen what and heard the testimony of what the people have said. And in the last clip, we heard what the students were saying to themselves, what a student had written about the situation in Gaza, and the people do stand in solidarity with the Palestinians. And what has happened since October 7th is a murderous crime. It is a crime committed by the Israelis, and we hope that the U.S. will stop supplying arms and weaponry to the Israeli government. We are financing this. How can we provide weapons for the Israelis and claim that we're feeding them, but they are having a famine. They are starving. So we need to change this. I think it's not so much how we stand with the Palestinians right now as just having the will to speak up and say receive these Palestinians, allow them to receive medical care and shelter. Treat them as human beings. Jim Crow suggesting that a two-state solution. We tried that in the United States. I think they called it Jim Crow. It didn't work. People need to live together in unity. The Palestinians need to have a right to self-determination. They are being murdered and slaughtered. We are watching a Holocaust like we have not seen. 35,000 people are dead since October 7th. Another 7,000 or 8,000 are jailed. Students are jailed. There's a professor that was on Democracy Now! And the BBC a couple of weeks ago or last month. She was arrested. The last time I saw her was her being held to be by the Israelis. Was she released? What happened to her? What happened to that woman? Her students, both Israeli and Palestinian, were standing up for her release. And the students will continue to stand up and show the world
1 minute, Sister Eleanor. 1 minute.
About what it means to stand up for justice, for human rights, what it means to stand up for the human rights of the Palestinian people, what it means to stand up for independence, for justice, and they are not yielding. And they're not doing it with violence. They're doing it with peace, with their chance. They're putting their lives on the line throughout the world. Because now the United States, as we saw in California, other states, the police are taking action against these students. And this is appalling. Thank you, Brother Africa, for allowing me to participate in this evening's forum. And thank you to my fellow analysts for their patience. And good evening.
Same to you, Sister Admiral. Thank you. Brother Anthony, your response to the statement from Gaza, from the students to the U.S., your response and your final thoughts, Brother Anthony.
Yeah. The students in Gaza acknowledge the support they're getting from students inside the U.S. and I think it is significant. Students are around the world are showing solidarity with the Palestinian students in their struggle against settler colonialism and Zionism. It's going to sharpen the contradictions inside these imperialist states where these students reside. Students are the spark of the revolution, as it has been shown throughout history. The students will spark this revolution. They are sparking it. They will not see it through. That's on the workers to do that. But students are the spark, and they will continue to be the spark of revolutionary struggle and they are for genuine change in society and not necessarily for maintaining the status quo. And so they're fulfilling their role correctly. And let's see. And I think the takeaway from this program tonight is that students are the spark of the revolution. And we must encourage them in their efforts to do that. Forward ever to Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism.
Thank you, Brother Anthony. Now we go to Brother Hackey. Brother Hackey, your response from the statement from Gaza, from the students to the students to the U.S., and your final thoughts. The mic is yours, Brother Hackey.
Yeah, well, I certainly can understand the brothers' appreciation for, you know, these student movements that are taking place addressing the issue in terms of Zionism and the ill effects imposed upon the state of Palestine. I certainly understand that, but certainly one of the things I think I would caution people about, I think, you know, there's a strange series of events taking place around the world. Whether we're talking about Palestine or talk about Sudan or the Congo, people of color are dying at great numbers. And the question becomes, why are these, what are these people around the world have in common in terms of the West propensity in terms to inflict harm upon them? Well, a lot of it has to do with geopolitical interests, of course. A lot of it has to do in terms of indifference to those who are perceived as different. But one thing we cannot dismiss is this whole question around the issue of racism. I think one of the things we have to begin to understand is that as much as we don't want to deal with this question of race, which is a social construct, it does resonate in the mind of a lot of people. It resonates in the conservative mind. It resonates in the liberal mind. To the extent that people are willing to reject this notion and that, in fact, that we are different based upon skin color, or to the extent they're willing to embrace that, then certainly people in positions of power have the wherewithal to ensure, you know, that the conditions are created to ensure, you know, that people continue to think along those lines in terms of race. So one of the things when we talk about in terms of the struggles of the Palestinians, and when we think about the question in terms of skin color, can see it as somehow a trivial matter. I think as much as we like to attribute to class, I think the bottom line is that it's much more intricate than class. You know, certainly one of the things when you talk about class, if you want to be very honest about it, if it's a question of class, certainly one of the things you can do in terms of enhancing your class interest is to actually improve the conditions of those societies. If, in fact, your motivation is all about class or access to material gains. So the mere fact that you put into place policies which are damaged to the poor, opposed to your material interest, means that your interest is not guided by the accumulation of things, but it's guided by other things. And that other thing is the question of terms of skin color. So I know we don't want to deal with that, but we have to deal with that. Because even in the context of America, unless liberal progressives deal with the question in terms of race, in terms of the perception that your skin color defines who you are, until we fundamentally reject this notion and not accept the fact that we're all one people, we're all one human organism out of Africa, if you will, until we accept that fact, then the bottom line is that people in power will always manipulate us, use our perceptions to create this notion that, in fact, people are different based upon skin color. It's a very nefarious and a very evil kind of strategy, but it's effective. And so, therefore, so we talk about Palestine, Congo, South Sudan, you know, or not South Sudan, but Sudan generally. So when we talk about in terms of these atrocities inflicted upon these people, to understand Western powers, the U.S., U.K., France in particular, have a vested interest in ensuring these very deleterious, very negative conditions exist in these societies. So we have our work cut out for us in terms of understanding the complexity in terms of the struggle. And until we are willing to honestly deal with this question in terms of this foolishness around skin color, until we're ready to seriously deal with that, the bottom line is that this stuff is not going to go anywhere. But I do appreciate the fact that the brothers is grateful for the outpouring of support for the Palestinians, and it should be, the support should be there. I mean, clearly, what they're doing to the Palestinians, you know, it's unconscionable. There's no question about that. I mean, the wholesale slaughter of 35 million people, the level of people who are wounded. I think Sister Eleanor talked about 700 people. So when you talk about these kind of atrocities being inflicted upon people, I mean, you got to be concerned. I think we got to be, as an African person inside America, I think one of the reasons why I'm particularly concerned is that what they're doing to the Palestinian people, what they're doing to the Congolese, what they're doing to the Sudanese, is also potentially could happen right here in America. For those of us who think our position is secure simply because we were born here, then think again. There's a constitution that fundamentally says that you're not American citizens. You're treated as though you're not American citizens. When you look at Supreme Court decisions, all suggest that the African people are not citizens of the United States. If, in fact, you're not a citizen of the United States, then clearly, as society decays, then you got to understand that we become useful tools in terms of the proliferation of all kind of violent kinds of things that has to happen in order for this system to maintain any legitimacy whatsoever, certainly any longevity. So we got to understand the correlation between the hatred inflicted upon the Palestinians, the same kind of hatred inflicted upon African people and or people of color right here in America. So this question in terms of skin color has to be addressed. There's no getting away on it. Class is fine. You can raise class. But class is not a be end all of any kind of analysis when it comes to human behavior. That we have to fundamentally understand. And, you know, and as always, Brother Africa, I encourage people to unravel the matrix. Because one of the things we're very, very clear on, when we talk about the inequality sweep to society, we have to fundamentally understand that a lot of these corporations who make tons and tons of money, even though they're making tons and tons of money, they are broke. They're essentially broke as well. And given this reality in terms of the government's ability in terms of revenues, the ability in terms of financing schools, affordable housing, education, those things are important to the masses of people. Those kind of things become esoteric as far as the government's concerned because you don't have the funds to address those issues. And so if we think for one second that these Democrats are going to stand up and say, hey, I'm going to fight for the interests of the people at the expense of their own interests, then we need to think again. So this is a fundamental problem we're confronted with. So we must begin to understand the importance at this point in history, right now, to understand the role of institutions, organizations to deal with the issues that we're confronted with, understanding that what's happened to this Palestinian, you know, we are not far removed from that same kind of thing happening to us. And that is a reality. So when we talk about human resource, I mean, HR Bill 645, when we talk about the implementation of internment camps, understand who they talk about putting those internment camps. They're talking about predominantly African and or Latin people. So clearly we got our work cut out for us. We must not deceive ourselves to think that color distinction doesn't exist. That is very much a factor in American society. And with that, Brother Africa, you have a good night.
You do the same, Brother Hackey. We thank you. At this point in time, we're going to pay a special tribute to the students and the Palestinian people in general. And when we come back, we will have some announcements and final words on this particular program tonight as it relates to Palestine and the Palestinian struggle. You are listening to Africa on the Move.
دائما منعما وغالبا مكرما دائما منعما
We'd like to welcome you back to Africa on the Move as we discuss what's going on. You can see there's a major phenomenon that is taking place as relates to the Palestine. And there's an event, or there are events that are coming up that will directly educate you on this particular phenomenon that we, as supporters of this particular movement, would like to invite the listening audience, all friends, supporters, and freedom fighters, that this year they will be celebrating their 66th commemoration of African Liberation Day and the 76th years of commemoration of Palestine and Nakba Day. African Liberation Day was on April 15, 1958. It's Friday under African Freedom Day, and Nakba Day took place on May 15, 1948. In Washington, D.C., under the banner of In Nakba Day, the Palestinian Youth Movement, we have an event on May the 18th, and on Sunday, May the 19th, which is also the birthday of Malcolm X and Ho Chi Minh, there will be an African Liberation Day under the banner of the All African People's Revolutionary Party. We ask you to go to the website to find out more updated information on this event by going to www.aaprpgc.org. This year's theme under the AAPRPGC is From Cape Town to Cairo, the Jordan River to the Mediterranean Sea, Pan-Africanism and Palestine's liberation are indivisible. Smash the genocide or international imperialism, Zionism, and apartheid. That is the theme for this year, African Liberation Day. So I encourage you to check out the website, come out, spread the word, support it. We remind you that this station, Africa on the Move, is a community project of the African American Association, and you can listen to this radio program every Sunday evening, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We salute the Palestinian students for their resistance against oppression, and we know the organization, all things are possible, and we say victory to the people of Palestine. Until next week, we will continue to strive to go forward ever, backwards never, and for the next 20 minutes or so, we will play music of inspiration and liberation in remembrance of and support of the Palestinian people struggle. Thank you for allowing Africa to move. You're coming to your home this evening. This has been Brother Africa, and we'll see you next week.
Living in pain, today is the same, and nothing ever changes. Talking about news, can't tell the truth, filled with abuse, and everywhere there's danger. How long can this go on? When will the light I see? I know I must be strong to last through my journey, yeah, to last through my journey, yeah. Time will arrive when we must decide to get off the ride and stop going through these changes. And learn how to care, for soon we'll be there where our lives won't be in danger. And when the light is clear, oh how beautiful I will be, to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah, 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 made it through my journey, made it through my journey.
Pellerino, a bloodline across the waters, from Benin to Salvador Bahia. A scar across the face of the earth. Pellerino, the place they brought the Africans, the place where they tried to make them slaves. Pellerino! You can feel the whip, hear the cries, and see the blood in the red clay. The clay that holds the stones together is Africa. And each stone is a bone from a people called slaves. Pellerino was the place where death came to dwell. His neighbors did not complain, for he was a way out. From the cold, gray, cobblestone streets to the lifeless cathedrals, tall walls of demons called angels, haunted visions of white faces, crucifying Jesus again and again. But in the sacrifice of this blood, of this dance with death, comes life more rich, more pure, more alive, where death spent many lonely nights pacing the floors of his funeral parlor, waiting for someone to die. Pellerino, a French word called the place of torture, became a place of strength, a place where faces of white saints became faces of black gods, where haunted visions and demons became healing visionaries and orishas from the motherland. And Jesus rejoined his kinfolk and was reborn and baptized in the sound of sensual skin turned up to dance, to inspire a fire like the sun, pronouncing his presence. Pellerino was the tongue of the flame, licking the eyes of those who tried to remain blind, shining a light on a spirit that would not be denied. No, the chains did not break the spirit. did not enslave the music of my soul, did not shackle the will of my freedom, did not tarnish the glow of my gold. And all the Pelerinos in Africa, in Europe, in North and South America cannot destroy the majesty of my people, the love of my people, shining like the sun everywhere we go. Everywhere we go. When the light is clear, oh, how beautiful I will be to know that I've been here and made it through my journey, yeah, and made it through my journey, yeah.
Just the way things are to be, yeah. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. Give you all my love, oh yeah. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. It's my words and my sorrow. Mama, I will never let you down. I'll never go away. I'll always be around. You know why you do it, such love that you found. I'm always gonna let you wear that crown. Through the roughest of times, you maintain your calm, your words, your only end, while sheltering me from the storm. And when it's cold, you wrap me in a towel so warm. Oh my, oh my, I'm so glad I was born. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. Give you all my love, oh yeah. Well, thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. This is my world. I'm gonna make you so proud, so good, so you are. You're the one who teaches me all the good from the bad. Even when the system keeps pressuring my dad, you got I, oh, thanks be unto the Most High God. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. Give you all my love, oh yeah. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. All my vision, aspiration, I owe it all unto you. It's my words and my dream. I'm a big man now, that's how things go. Things to do to survive, only die, no. Barely protecting us while watching us grow. You've been up, even when it's from the down low. Work so hard your coaches do blisters on your fingers so they can't take us for food. I'm here for a purpose, I'm here to rule. But I die, as before I will see you through. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through all those pain and suffering. No one knows the pressure you bear, just only you. Oh, now it's my turn to make life. I'm so much younger, you know I've got my kids and my wife. And I'm positive and sure I'm doing fine. And since you can do so much more, you're preparing for the future, my love, you deserve. Keep doing your thing, while others not knowing. Go deep inside your heart, Mama, you know where it was going. Can a mother lose her tender care for her child that she be showing? Somehow, your star keeps glowing. Thank you, Mama, for the 9 months you carried me through.
Scholars and scientists now concede that Africa is the birthplace of mankind. Africans were the first builders of civilization. They discovered mathematics, invented writing, developed sciences, engineering, medicine, religion, fine arts, and built the Great Pyramids, an architectural achievement which still baffles modern science.
The 225th emperor, direct descent from Solomon and the Queen of Sheba, He is the King of Kings, the Lion of Judah. The name Haile Selassie means power of the Trinity.
Educate yourself of Africa. Liberate yourself, Africa. Keep your heads up high. No more will we cry. Our history that they stole, Africa, is written in our souls, Africa. Oldest nation on this earth, know just what you were. Well, well, ships that sail to distant places robbed us of our rights and worth. This
the God you serve. Hear the rumbling in the sky. Hear that our forefathers cry. And today we're still in jail. Stand the shackle from our minds. You're the cornerstone, the King upon the throne.
Motherland representer, I'm on trial with the man, she my co-defendant, and I demand her attention, can you focus, woman? I'm getting closer to the sky every time I hit it. Haile Selassie, power of the Trinity, soul made in Niger, my wife's made in Italy, white man's world that I'm living in, some say, but it was Africa, the continent we all came from, can't nothing come between me and you, so before I have seeds, gotta understand my roots, gotta understand the truth, we is all kings round here, life's not all fair, work till we fall dead, all going hard till I earn like a poor bird, although my body's in the U.S., my heart's there, I can never be ashamed of her, I got my features and my name from her, Mama Africa.
The richest place on earth, know just what you're worth.
Thank you.
watch your step, cause you never know where the knife will go and they ain't missed yet. The strong survive, they stay alive, they always do, but that they never teach you in school. Are you mad enough, big and bad enough? Are you gonna let them shoot you down? Will they even fly, and your brothers cry? Are you gonna be around? Someone needs a friend, just around the bend. Don't you think you should be there? Are you mad enough, when you go and get the love?
White.